Continuing our financial theme this half hour, looking at the cost of parenting and how that is stopping some women from having kids. The parenting and pregnancy website Baby Center conducted an online poll that found 61% of mothers surveyed were worried about not having enough money to raise their children. 43% of those surveyed said that they waited to have a child until they were financially prepared. So what does this all mean to the future of our country? Just last week, we were talking about an aging workforce. Who's going to replace those workers as our population shrinks? Our uncertain economy will have an even bigger impact on a couple's decision to start a family. Would love to hear your views on this. Give me a call, 974-TALK, 974-8255. You can always email me, calgarytoday@qr77.com. Peter John Mitchell is a senior researcher with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. He has taken a close look at why Canadian families are getting smaller and what can be done about it. Good afternoon, Mr. Mitchell.
Hi, good afternoon.
You know, this isn't something that has just happened overnight. What have we been seeing in Canada when it comes to our population in the last 20 years?
Yeah, our general population has been going up, but our family sizes actually have been going down probably since, certainly we have numbers from the early 70s that show that our families have been shrinking. And in particular, the number that everybody talks about is our total fertility, and that's how many children a woman has during her fertile years. And that number, it's been going down and it sort of bubbled up a little bit again, but it's certainly well below replacement, and that's why people are certainly talking about this issue.
And you say the population might be going up, but is that because the government has looked at ways of increasing a population, building a workforce, and immigration levels, things like that?
Yeah, certainly those things can affect that. So you can certainly have a population increasing, but certainly your fertility, overall fertility, decreasing or holding, or as in the case of Canada, under the replacement rate, which is about 2.1 children per woman. Now, that sounds kind of funny, that 2.1,
mm-hmm,
but obviously
yeah.
it's an average. It's mm-hmm. It's how it averages out. And we're sitting at about 1.6, so that's fairly well under what we need for replacement.
Well, and maybe someone could argue, well, why do we have to increase our population, well, not the population, but encourage women to have babies if we're able to just increase the immigration levels and we're still able to have enough people in the workforce? Why do we have to worry about actually having more babies?
Well, certainly increasing immigration has been one of the answers or one of the things the governments often do to kind of combat that. And it does help a little bit. In the long run, it doesn't it may not be the big solution. Those workers that come to Canada often are sort of middle-aged or sort of in the middle of their careers. So they are certainly productive, and that's good, but then eventually they retire and start using some of those benefits and things that such as health care, increased use of health care and retirement and that sort of thing as well. So it's certainly something the governments do, but we just wouldn't be able to have enough immigration even to kind of make up the gap. And as you said in your introduction, we are an aging society. And actually we'll see something new that we haven't seen in Canada in the next 10 years. We'll see that there will be more people age 65 and older than 15 years and younger. So that'll be certainly a change in our demographics in the next 10 years.
And then we talk about the impact that has on health care, on pensions, whether or not we're going to have enough in the pension fund for all those people who are going to start to retire.
Yeah, exactly. And governments have been talking a little bit about this, but it's certainly something that needs to be addressed and looked at now. And certainly that's going to come down to a bit of a financial crunch. And it will certainly come down, I think, to individuals and our sort of our own personal saving plans and even how we pull together as families and as communities to support one another. Because certainly it's going to be difficult for the government to pay the sort of incentives and sort of the benefits that we've come accustomed to.
So let's focus on fertility, on women having babies and why they are deciding not to have babies. What are some of the roadblocks in their way of having families?
Well, certainly there's a number of issues. It's probably not just one issue. I guess over the last 100 years, one of the big issues is just this change in our labor force, the change in our economy, moving from more farming to industry and now to a knowledge economy. So it used to be that children were seen as an economic benefit. Certainly they were help on the farm and that sort of thing. But as our labor force has changed, children are seen more, I guess, now as an expense. Mm-hmm. And certainly even looking at recent numbers, the U.S. Department of Agriculture last year estimated that a middle-income family with two children was spending between $11,000 and $13,500 a year on child rearing. And I know a few years ago, I guess, that it was now that Manitoba Agriculture had ran some numbers as well and came up with a figure about $167,000 to raise one child from 0 to 18, and that's not including tuition. So certainly financial reasons, and particularly in the economy that we see now, the worldwide economy faltering, people are thinking twice and certainly considering their own finances before starting family. So that's part of it. Part of it, too, is that as we see more women entering the workforce and as education has become more important to securing good jobs, certainly more people are spending longer in school, and so as they engage in education and beginning their careers and getting their careers, solidifying their careers, they're basically putting childbearing on hold. And the longer that we wait, the fewer children that we are likely to have as we're getting towards the end of the fertility sort of years. And we're actually seeing that in another way in terms of increasing births to women who are in their late 30s and early 40s, something that we haven't seen in Canada before.
Wow, lots of things, and definitely not just one answer. I'm with Peter John Mitchell. He is with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada, talking about why women are holding off on having babies, the high cost of having babies, maybe some solutions coming up after the break.
She's smart, funny, and she wants to hear from you. This is Calgary Today with Angela Cocotts, inviting you to call in with your 2 cents worth. Call 974-8255 and online at qr77.com.
So we know our workforce is aging, and immigration can only do so much to help that. We need to have more babies, but what is it going to take for women to make that decision? And especially during tough economic times, my guest this half hour is Peter John Mitchell with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. And Peter, when you start throwing around the figures that you did just before the break, $167,000 to raise a child, you know, people right away say this is not the time to be having a child. When is a good time to have a kid?
Well, there is an old saying that if you wait till when you're ready or think you're financial ready, you may never have children. I don't know if there's truth to that or not, but certainly economics does play a huge role, apparently, in people's minds. And I don't know. Looking at the economy, certainly things look like, certainly south of the border and even across the world, things are probably going to get worse before they get better. So I guess it's in terms of planning those decisions, and certainly I think what really pulled me into this issue was thinking about how do people who have really large families, how do they do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think really the answer is that they make a lifestyle choice to support that. They may forego other things and other luxuries to raise their children. So I think part of it is a lifestyle adjustment perhaps for people who are really intentional about having larger families.
Peter, it is such a personal decision too.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's the trouble. When even you start talking about this, I know someone's listening saying, you know, maybe I don't want to have any kids. Why do I feel like you're making me feel I have to have babies? But I want to look at the bigger picture here when it comes to the economy, because, yes, we're focused on a negative economy and what's happening financially. But at the same time, we do need to continue to grow as a country so that we have the people to do the jobs that we need to keep our economy going.
Right, and you're absolutely right. It's an intensely personal decision, but it has public policy implications, which makes it, I think, a fascinating issue to study, but it makes it a very sensitive issue.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, when we come to thinking about what role might government have, I think that's something we need to talk about very cautiously. Mm-hmm. There's something very uncomfortable, whether it's the government that's limiting fertility, as we've seen in places like China with their one-child policy, or whether it's governments trying to encourage fertility. There's something uncomfortable about that, and I think we have to kind of talk cautiously. Governments in the past have, as we talked about, increased immigration, and while that I think will help in the short term, it's not a really long-term solution. But one of the other things that the governments around the world have attempted to do to increase fertility is to create financial incentives. And in fact, we've seen that in the province of Quebec, and we've seen that in many European countries, such as Sweden, France, Germany. And certainly, and those financial incentives might be baby bonuses. Mm-hmm. They might be generous parental leaves, fully funded childcare. It tends to, when we look at sort of the international example, when governments start committing large funds to this, we see that it does sort of tease up fertility rates. But in those countries that I mentioned, such as France and Sweden, they're still below the replacement fertility rate. But they would sort of considered sometimes successful by some people because they have a larger rate than we do in Canada. So their Sweden, for instance, is about 1.9 total fertility per woman. The challenge comes, and particularly in hard economic times, is trying to support those generous leaves. And this has happened in Sweden, where they've had generous financial incentives, and then they've had to scale those back. And then and a couple of years later, they might reoffer those, and then they have to scale them back. And we see kind of fertility kind of bumping up and down. And so the real question is, are governments really getting the biggest bang for their buck? And it turns out that they're spending a lot of money to tease up fertility rates just a little bit. And a couple of years ago, the C.D. Howe Institute did a study of the Quebec model, and particularly previous generous kind of leave system and baby bonus that they gave. And so what they did in their study is they charted the trend of how many babies were being born, and then they looked at the year that they brought in the generous baby bonuses. Mm-hmm. And they sort of did calculations to look at, well, how much money is spent to sort of encourage extra kind of birth and that sort of thing. And basically what they distilled it down to is that for every sort of birth that they could, you know, possibly attribute to this program was about $15,000 worth of taxpayer money. So a lot of money being spent to tease up a little bit of incentive. And incentives tend to work best for people who are already probably have a child, already in a position to have children. They're not so attractive to people, for instance, young people who perhaps aren't in a relationship, who are just starting out in their careers. They're not, maybe not really interested in that. They're kind of postponing those decisions till later on. Mm-hmm. So those incentive programs don't really even really apply to them.
Yeah, and then when you talk about incentive programs, sure, it's one thing to say the government should do something. That's really the government using our tax dollars. So then there's
exactly. It is really our use of our tax dollars to, mm-hmm. to try to tease out a little bit. And it's, yes, it does work a little bit, but they're not getting like a big return right. on your tax dollar being mm-hmm. given to somebody else to encourage them to have children.
No easy solutions. And I want to take your calls. I've just got to take a break.
Forget yesterday. This is Calgary Today with Angela Cocott on QR77. Call in and join the conversation. 974-TALK, 974-8255, or go online at QR77.com.
My guest this half hour is Peter John Mitchell, a senior researcher with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. We're talking about a pretty big topic, why women are putting off motherhood, why young couples are having smaller families. I don't expect to have all the solutions or answers in this half hour, but I just want to hear from you as well, 974-TALK, 974-8255. Hi, Melita.
Hi, my husband and I have 5 kids, and I agree with your guest that it's a lifestyle choice. We don't have all the fancy toys and all the gadgets, but my kids don't do without, and we're happy, mm-hmm. and we have made a choice. We have made a lifestyle choice, and we're very happy. I think our problem we have now is people only want one or maybe 2 kids or no kids because they want all the fancy toys. Skip the toys and... Mm-hmm.
You know, have some fun with some kids. How old were you, Melita, when you had your first child, if you don't mind me asking?
I was 26.
26?
Yeah, I was 26 when we had our last one a year ago. And
and you thought you'd call it quits at 5?
Well, I think so. I think so. And not so much that we don't want anymore is that I am busy.
Peter, great to hear from Melita, but she's definitely agreeing with you about the whole lifestyle thing. And the fact is she was 26, which some people would say that's not that young either to have a big family.
Well, we noticed that if we look at the overall trend, that the age of marriage, the age of first birth, all these things are being delayed. So, and actually, a number of years ago, Stats Canada did a study where they were looking at, they had a study appropriately called Who Has a Third, looking at families that had a third child. And one of the things that they found is that women who have children earlier in life, actually it was around about 24, have their first child around 24, are more likely to have a third. So that's part of it, is when we get started. Certainly, as we talked about, as we delay our fertility intentions, then that leaves less time. And I think sometimes maybe we're not all aware of that. I'm not sure how many young people kind of coming out of, say, high school or marriage and family seems a long, long way away, but I'm not sure they understand necessarily even how their own body works in terms of fertility and sort of everything is sort of on a timeline.
Oh, yeah, it's the clock for sure. Melita, thanks for taking some time out of your busy life to give us a call.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Okay, bye.
You know what? Unfortunately, I have run out of time. Peter, I sure appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Peter John Mitchell is with the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada.